Okay. Ezekiel 44 presents a beautiful reflection and commentary on the role and action of priests in the book of Leviticus. Numerous things are mentioned, including haircuts and beard trims, that one is to not shave their head, but one is also to not let their beard grow uncontrollably. And I found it interesting in Jewish tradition this week as I was looking at some of the literature, they were to shave at least once a month, according to one explanation. That way their beard would not be unkept. Other things that they were to not wear wool as they worked in the service of the Most High in the Mishkan. They wore linen garments, but no wool garments. I think this came up last week during Torah study, actually. I made the comment that the command not to mix wool and linen was because there was only one place where wool and linen were allowed together in the entire Torah. And that was in the tabernacle, in the tapestries, in the coverings of the tabernacle. There you found wool and linen together. In the worship of the Most High, there would be wool and linen mixed together. And so ordinary people would not mix wool and linen because that was reserved something special for the Most High. Here we get a different reason. It's that it says that the priest would not perspire. No sweating allowed when you serve God. okay. Not induced sweat. So there is no sweat when you serve the Most High, seems to be the idea here. There's a number of things here in this Haftorah portion that are actually different than what we see in the book of Leviticus. Comments about marriage, limited to, in the book of Leviticus, to the high priest. Here they're generalized to all priests. And I've stated before that that these kinds of, if you want to call them discrepancies, actually led to great discussion. At one point, very early in the rabbinic history, at the Council of Yavna in the year 90, there was a great discussion on what do we do with Ezekiel, rather. Can we include it in our scriptures? And there's the story that one rabbi used up 300 vials of midnight oil, it was called in the literature. 300 vials of midnight oil trying to work out a resolution to the discrepancies between Ezekiel and the Torah. And the end result was, well, when Elijah comes, they will all be straightened out. So there is yet another reference to Elijah. We talked about that a few weeks ago, leading up to Passover. All the things that that Elijah does and clarifies and teaches us. One of the things that struck me in this Haftorah portion, speaking about priests, in the vision, what I believe is the vision of worship and a temple in a setting yet to come. I don't take it as just a idealized or vision of something that might be something ideal or a wish or a desire or a picture of something unique, because Ezekiel's vision of the temple was not what we got in the second temple that was built by Zerubbabel and friends. But I take this as a vision of a temple yet to come. A vision of a temple that, as we've seen earlier, involves Messiah. Messiah is at the center. Messiah is the prince at the center of this new temple. This is the temple, remember, that there's a trickle of water that comes out from the altar. And as it flows out of the temple steps, it becomes a stream. And by the time it flows over the hill into the Kidron Valley, it's widening and it's deepening. And it flows all the way down to the Dead Sea, and it brings life. That's the stream. Remember that instead of getting shallower as it flowed further, it actually got deeper and wider. The river of the life of God that brings life to things that are dead in that dramatic image. This is an amazing picture of a temple. Pictures of Messiah himself. So sometime I encourage you to jump into Ezekiel and read the last 8 or 10 chapters of Ezekiel, and just give yourself a try to soak in these dramatic pictures. They're complex. They're difficult to understand, but I think there are images here that we can see of Messiah. One thing I wanted to highlight was verse 23. I'm in the Haftorah portion, Ezekiel 44. It says, "The priests are to teach my people the difference between the holy and the common, and they are to cause them to discern between the unclean and the clean." The role of the priest in Messiah's temple to come, there is an interesting comment about what priests are to do. They're to be teachers. They are to teach my people the difference between what is holy and common, and teach people to discern between what is clean and unclean. Some of this flows out in the liturgy for the Havdalah service. That is the ceremony that ends the Sabbath, where you light a candle, take a sip of wine after you say the Kiddush blessing. You sniff the spice box and you say the blessing over the fire, and then you dunk the candle in the remaining wine, and that's the ceremony. It's very short, just 3 minutes long or so. But at the end, there's a blessing where we thank God for teaching us how to distinguish between the Sabbath and the other 6 days a week, how to distinguish between what is holy and what is common, the ability to distinguish between Israel and the nations. These are all things that play into the observance of the Sabbath. Understanding Sabbath is being able to make distinctions. And it's the priest's role to teach the people. From that, I gather that understanding right and wrong, or understanding what is special to God, what is holy to God, and what is common, is something that doesn't come natural to us. We need a teacher. This needs to be demonstrated to us in a very concrete way. The Sabbath teaches us that lesson. The circumcision teaches us that lesson, and so forth. We have to be very carefully taught, to paraphrase a songwriter who used it in a different way. But I was thinking about the idea of teaching. I found it intriguing that the first person in Scripture that we're told was ever filled with Ruach Elohim, the Spirit of God. Do you remember his name? Do you know that story? Bezalel, right. Bezalel, his name is beautiful. I love it. It means in the shadow of God. According to tradition, he was Hor's grandson and a great nephew of by marriage of Moses, and perhaps even a young person. At one point, we're told that he was merely a teenager at this time in the book of Exodus. But we're told that God filled him with his Spirit and gave him the ability to teach. Exodus chapter 34, verse 34, says that God put in his heart the ability to teach. He put teaching in his heart. And as I explored that this week, and it was like, God, I want that. God, it says, Natan Billy Bull. God put in his heart to teach. God, I want that. I love the passage. One of my favorite passages, maybe not favorite in the traditional sense, but one time Karen and I, right after we got married, we sat down and we talked about what scriptures were significant to us. What scriptures communicated something that we wanted to endeavor to. And one of them that I mentioned was by the prophet Malachi, Malachi. And there's a passage there that says that the priests guard knowledge, and from his lips, people are pulled back from evil. People learn life from the lips of a priest. Malachi is contrasting bad priest and good priest. There are actually bad priests. And if you look in the passage just before our Haftorah portion in Ezekiel 44, Ezekiel is talking about bad priests. Imagine instead of the linen turban on their head, they have black hats. The good, bad, and the ugly or something. But the good priests have linen, white linen turbans on their head. That was the origin, I think, of that the good guys wore white hats. Maybe not. But Malachi is contrasting priests who it's really bad and ugly what they do. They eat the food. They don't honor the people that come to make sacrifices. And then Malachi contrasts that with priests that teach and walk in righteousness. Priests that are true descendants of Aaron. They are truly men of peace. and flowing in line with the Jewish tradition that Aaron was a peacemaker. And true priests are priests that walk in that light. They teach righteousness, and on their from their lips, people find words of life. I found it interesting, though, as I was exploring this, that that Joseph Hertz, contemporary modern Jewish commentator, makes the note on this verse in our Haftorah portion that priests are to teach. The difference between the holy and the common, clean and unclean. Rabbi Hertz says this is one of the most crucially important roles for people that follow God. Not limited to priests alone. He says this is limited to all. And he outlines prophet, priest, sage, rabbi, all of Israel. And I would add to that all who choose to call on the name of the God of Israel, who choose to be owned, as we talked about last week, who choose to be owned by the God of Israel. From the Haftorah portion from the book of Amos, talking about how the nations would call on the name of the God of Israel. The role and the responsibility to teach, to continue and perpetuate that. I like the way that Aaron, when he was leading us in prayer, made the beautiful comment from the Haftorah, from the Via Hafta, when he said, in our translation, it says, teach these things to your children. And Aaron commented about his mom, who likes to translate it, teach this diligently to your children. Let's pump that up a little bit. It's not just teach, it's teach with some diligence, teach with some thrust, teach, use every teachable. I don't know how his mom does it. We should ask her. How does she teach it diligently? The Hebrew verb there, vishinantam, in the Via Hafta, is a verb that actually means to repeat. And thus, Aaron's mom gets the idea of teaching diligently. If you repeat something, it comes over and over and over. There is a statement in the Talmud that says that a good student is not one that has repeated his lesson 100 times, but a student that has repeated his lesson 101 times. And like Yeshua's comment about 70 times 7, it is not the final number that is the point, but it is the consistency that is the point. Teach, repeat. Remember the joke? Pete and repeat were sitting on a fence. Pete fell off. Who was left? And of course, the answer is repeat. And then you say, well, Pete and repeat were sitting on a fence. Pete fell off. Who was left? Anyway, that's one I remember, I think, from first grade. The repeat diligently. And I have, from this Via Hafta, often said that we therefore do not begin teaching our children when they're 8 or 9, and you definitely don't wait till they're 13 or 15. You have lost the game. You are not even in the game. You began teaching a child in the way they should go on the path that you want them to be when they're 15, you begin teaching at the very beginning. And so that when they are 13 and 15, they're already making the right decisions. If you try to teach them something at that point, it's too late. At that point, they need to be making their own wise decisions and understanding and having that inculcated from the very beginning. In the second version of the Via Hafta in the Shema from Deuteronomy chapter 11, it teaches us that the entire community has a role in teaching. All of you are to teach all of your children. It's not something limited to parents. It takes, as we've been taught, it takes a village to raise a child. By the way, some speechwriter or a president's wife didn't invent that statement. That statement comes straight out of Torah. There is our role to be teachers. In Acts chapter 2, on the anniversary of the giving of the Torah on Mount Sinai, on that Shavuot story in Acts chapter 2, we're told that 3,000 Jews came to trust Messiah that day. By the way, that day is not the birthday of the church. There was no one Gentile there that day. Everyone there was Jews. So it wasn't the birthday of the church. It was, if you want to call it, the beginning of Messianic Judaism. We'll go with that. But there on that day of great increase to the Messianic Jewish movement, which we have inherited the legacy, we're told that the people continue to gather together. And it even says they gather together daily. They have a nosh. They eat food together. But we're told that what do they talk about? They talk about the teachings that they have received. They talk about the teachings that they've inherited from their teachers, like Yochanan, or Shimon Kifa, or Matityahu, Matthew, John, Peter, Yaakov, Jacob, or James. They continue in the disciples' teachings. In that same way, what is one of the last things that Messiah tells his students? In Matthew's version of the story, he says, "Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, immersing them in the name of Ha'av, Ha'ben, the Haruach, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Spirit of Holiness, teaching them to observe all I have commanded you. And remember, I am with you always to the end of the age, all the way to the Olam Haba, the age to come." The main verb there in that that statement is not go. I've seen many churches have big banners that says, "Go, go to the nations." But that is not actually Yeshua's point. Yeshua's point was actually make disciples. That was the verb. The go part was a participle. As you are going, while you are going, and I have some ideas about what he meant by this going, but that's beyond the scope of the current discussion. He said, make disciples. And then he says, as you are going, immersing them and teaching them. Three tasks to make disciples. Going, immersing, and teaching. And the final one he mentioned was that one about teaching. In Jewish culture, at the time of Messiah, a student would come in, choose a rabbi to associate himself with, a rabbi that he related to, a rabbi that he thought he could learn from. And there he would study until he became... reached a level of understanding, or perhaps smicha, ordination, and would in turn become a rabbi who would gather students to himself. And he would continue to then teach his understanding of Torah. But with Messiah, it's different. It's interesting that Messiah picked his students. They didn't pick him. In no case did they come to him without his choosing them. Quite unlike the style of the day when students picked their teacher. Here the teacher picks the students. And they perpetually remain his students. It's not that they reach a level and then begin to teach their opinions and their ideas. It's not that they gain a certain level of understanding or wisdom or insight into to Torah and Tanakh and then to expound their own ideas. Here, Messiah's students are forever expounding Messiah's ideas, not their own ideas. Yeshua said, teaching them everything I have taught you. It's not about what you have in your perspective. It's about what Messiah has taught us. For us today, I have the honor and privilege, because you have chosen me to be the teacher of the congregation. But my job is to equip you to fill roles like that. According to one interpreter of Messiah, the role of the shepherd is to equip people to be shepherds, to be teachers, to be prophets, to be ambassadors of the good news, referring to Ephesians chapter 4. Thus, I believe Rabbi Hertz is right. This passage in our Haftorah portion about priests is something that we all carry. We all carry the imperative to teach the difference between the holy and the common, the clean and the unclean. We have a mandate from the Via Hafta: teach these things, repeat them to your children. The community has a responsibility to teach each other. That, quite frankly, is why I moved toward the vision of including a wider teaching base for our Torah study on Shabbat afternoons. Pushing more people into a place of where first they personally have to come to a deeper understanding of Messiah, a deeper understanding of Scripture, where they know what it says And it's breathing and it's living in them like Jeremiah had within him. This fire inside him that he wanted to quench so desperately because it'd save his life. But he couldn't. That's what I want to instill in, and not just those that participate in leading the Torah study. I want to instill that in all of you. All of you are teachers. All of us carry that messianic mandate from Messiah that as we're going, we all make disciples and we all become teachers. The very first person ever filled with God's Spirit became a teacher. My desire is to see you equipped and filled with God's Spirit so that you can fulfill Messiah's mandate to teach others. What is holy? What is common? What is clean and unclean? Because as I said, people are not able to make that decision and full understanding alone, or we wouldn't be told that they need to learn. We carry a great responsibility. And I know you'll go, but I don't know how. Well, even Moses said that once. Exodus chapter 4, God told Moses, I will teach you what to say. Same verb, by the way. I will teach you in Hebrew. I will teach you what to say. And the writers of the scriptures in the New Covenant pick this up, where it says, God will instruct us that He will go with us. He will purify us. If He has called us, and by the way, everyone is called, He will teach us, He will instruct us, He will purify us, He will be with us. He will teach us what to say. I love the legacy of this Haftorah portion, pushing us to proclaim the good news that we have experienced.